This is BirdieCast. Welcome to the show, Betsy. How are you doing today?
Yeah, hey, thanks so much for having me. All is good. I'm back in Minnesota now, and it's thankfully nice out. All is good. Just kind of prepping for the U.S. Open qualifier coming up.
Love it. Where are you playing it?
So I'm playing it in Minnesota, which is always sketchy when it's springtime because you could get snow or it could be 75 degrees and sunny. But it's at Somerset Country Club, I think just kind of right outside St. Paul, Minnesota. So it'll be good. Where are you playing yours again?
I'm actually going to Belgium for my U.S. Open qualifier. That is the first time ever that I know of there's been a U.S. Women's Open qualifier in Belgium, or a men's U.S. Open.
Oh, dang.
Like, that is just unheard of. So I signed up right away. And then turns out that the ladies' European tour event in Belgium is legit the week before on the same course. So that could not have worked out any better. So I'm pretty excited to go there. And yeah, it's actually in a couple weeks here. So yeah, excited about it. I haven't played that course before. And honestly, I haven't played in Belgium probably in the last like 6 years, which is actually pretty wild to think about. But yeah, so that's where I'm going to play mine. And it's going to be competitive because, you know, it's the European site. So all the European girls are going to be there. But I'm excited about it. Do you usually play your US Open qualifier in Minnesota?
Yeah, I do. But honestly, I think next year, I mean, we'll see. I'm thinking about just sticking around Arizona next year longer and playing it out there. But yeah, normally in Minnesota, it's tough. They normally only give away one spot because there's, you know, in like Arizona, I think there's maybe four or five spots, but that again is just the number of girls. So it all.
Yeah. I mean, the scores are going to be still low.
But let's go. Let's both get to Pebble this year.
Yeah, that'd be great. I saw it was like a record number of entries in the qualifier. It was like 2,000, whatever it was, like some absurd amount. So that's pretty cool. And that definitely has to do with the venue, right? Just being able to go and play and compete on Pebble. So that for sure has to do with it. So that's pretty cool. You're splitting your time, right? So in the summers, you're in Minnesota, where you grew up, where all your family is, right? And then what about the winters?
Yeah, so for any listeners that don't know me or my background, I grew up in Minnesota. Born and raised, I grew up on a little golf course called Forest Hills Golf Club, and our house was directly on the eighth hole. So my brothers and I, like, I started playing when I was, 4 years old, and my parents couldn't get my brothers and I off the golf course. But yeah, when I talk about time, so I stay in Minnesota during the summers. You can't beat it here. It's like perfect weather. Sometimes it gets a little humid, but winters are terrible. So I escape down to Scottsdale all winter. You know, it's like negative 35 degrees in Minnesota and iced out with snow. So there's not a lot of golf going on, but it's good. I'm blessed that I can do kind of the 6 months Minnesota, 6 months Arizona.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. How long have you been doing that?
This last winter was my third winter, but I also went down there in like, I think 2017, just as I was trying to play professionally. I think I lived down there for like 3 months, you know, played the Cactus Tour, just some mini tours, getting ready for the season. But it's good. I'm a young snowbird, I guess.
I love it. Yeah, tell us a little bit about, did you play in college? Where did you play? What kind of junior tournaments did you play growing up in that recruitment process?
Yeah, so when I talked about my background growing up in Minnesota, you know, started playing golf at 4 years old, I was hooked right away. Like, I think I told everyone since I was 4 years old that I wanted to be a professional golfer and I wanted to be on the LPGA. And so I set goals at a pretty young age and started playing in junior golf tournaments. I think my first junior golf tournament was when I was 7. I played like all the Minnesota junior PGA events. And then, you know, as time progressed, you get a little bit older. Obviously, high school golf came around, and I played varsity as a seventh grader. I think I was maybe 70 pounds and, you know, 4'11". So these like seniors in high school were like, who's this child playing at a varsity golf tournament? But yeah, my junior career was very successful. I kind of dominated a lot of the junior high school events. I won state. I qualified for the U.S. Junior Girls that was out at Trump National in 2009. And then I also qualified for the Minnesota Junior PGA Championship. So those were kind of fun. You know, you always want to qualify for those big national USGA tournaments. And as a kid or a junior golfer, and those were like some of the best experiences of my life or my career. And then as time progressed, you know, the goal was to get a Division I full ride scholarship. And I ended up playing at Colorado State. I was pretty much committed, or I was planning to go to the University of Minnesota, just kind of stay at home, and always was a big Gopher fan. But yeah, I ended up going to Colorado State. So college golf was great. Played Division I. My freshman and sophomore year were actually my best years in college. I almost won the Mountain West Conference Championship as a freshman. And to be honest, I didn't even know what was going on. I was just playing golf. And then I came in and they were like, oh, you took second place. And then I had multiple top five finishes and multiple top 10 finishes in my college career. And I kind of fell off after that, just some like health issues and whatever else. And then, yeah, I play professionally now. So I'm chasing it just like you are. Like, there's so many girls out there like us that are chasing their dreams and playing mini tours. And it's tough to make it until you make it, right?
Yeah, well, Betsy, there's no one like you, right? I mean, you are the PXG queen. yeah, pretty awesome to hear about your recruiting background, junior golf, playing in college. Do you still keep in touch with any of your teammates?
Oh, yeah. We actually, that's like the one cool thing about college golf. Like all these girls, they become your best friends. My college teammates and I, we actually have a group text. We call it our Ram Fam because we were the Colorado State Rams. So we have this big group text. We have a Snapchat group text. I'm terrible at keeping up on them, and they know that, but it's just so cool to keep in touch. And over the years, even, like, I've stayed at, you know, one of my teammates, she actually stayed in the golf industry, and she works for Ripstick. And she does, you know, golf fitness. You know, another one, she basically her parents shack up a lot of mini tour players at their house. So it's fun. And everyone's getting married now and like having kids. And I'm like, I'm over here, you know, just freaking my golf clubs are my kids.
Living a dream, baby.
Living a dream, yeah.
That's awesome. Did you play any other sports growing up?
Yeah, I did. I played pretty much everything. Real young, I was a gymnast, which I think kind of set me up for just some athleticism. And then mainly, like, high school, it was volleyball and golf. Volleyball, I'm not that tall. I was really good. Like, I played varsity volleyball since, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. I was a libero and a setter, but, you know, golf was always my core. But, you know, this leads to a good point. I think that playing multiple sports as a junior or in high school is very important versus just focusing on one sport. And some people might think differently, but that's kind of my opinion, just to stay well-versed and not get burnt out.
What about your support system? Now you've been playing professionally for a little while. Who is in your support system? What does your team look like?
Great question. So, and it takes a really great support system to do this and chase the dream. My boyfriend, Kirk, he's amazing. I found out I'm way better with him caddying on the bag, and I'm even better when I actually listen to him. he's amazing. He's like my rock through all this. My family, like my mom, my dad, my brothers, obviously, you know, them, and then my coaches. And I'd like to say sponsors, but honestly, I don't have like a core sponsor right now. People think I do, and I don't. You know, if you want to sponsor me, doors open. You can be in my sports system.
let's talk a little bit about your your coach or coaches? What kind of coach do you have?
So my coaches, again, that's a part of my support system, right? First, Dr. Luc Benoit, he's my swing coach, and I've been working with him since 2020. He's out of Interlochen in Minnesota. Golf Digest, top teachers. He's also the founder of Ripstick. So I know a lot of people that do follow me know that I post and preach about Ripstick, which is a speed training tool. And that's because as soon as I went and saw him, I mean, he got me on that. And yeah, I mean, just what he's done to improve my game over the last few years, he's really good. Interlochen, if you haven't heard of that course, it's probably one of the best courses in Minnesota. It's holding or hosting a women's U.S. Open, I think, in 2030. So that's really cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you haven't heard of
2030,
I think it's 2030 or 20. It's a ways out there, right? But they're going to have a U.S. Women's
that's
Open
awesome.
There. And in the past, they had a Solheim Cup, which is super cool. And that's, I remember going to it when I was young. And, you know, I think, actually, this is a cool story. I was in the grandstands when Annika announced she was retiring, and she made that shot.
What?
Remember when she made that shot from the fairway and she like holed out for eagle? And
yeah.
The last shot of her career. I was in the grandstands. It was like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Did you like freak out?
I was like, yeah, I mean, I was young too. And I was like, I don't know what's going on, but that was cool.
Oh, right. You don't really quite understand. She's retiring and all of that. Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, damn. Like, I was in the grandstands for that. That was pretty cool.
Oh, that's so cool.
So cool. So
did you get her autograph?
No, I didn't. But they, and I think I was maybe, I don't really remember at this point, but I know that like the TV channel interviewed me because I was this little, you know, blonde girl walking around and they were highlighting like young junior golfers. So that was kind of cool. And those are the things I wish I had on video now or kept. But anyway, so there's the Interlochen story. I guess shout out to Interlochen. But yeah, Dr. Luc Benoit, he's my swing coach. West Sharkey, he's one of my fitness trainers. I actually have a couple, which is ironic. But West Sharkey's amazing. I started working with him this winter in Scottsdale. And he just opened up the coolest facility in Scottsdale called Range Performance, which is basically an all-inclusive golf performance center with, you know, a simulator and like a fitness area for game improvement. But I actually call him the golf genius because I literally was just walking and he saw me take maybe two swings and he knew right away why I early extend. And it's because my left hip is, I don't know, he's a golf genius. I don't get it. I just do what he tells me to do in the gym to help with my rotation in my left hip to help prevent early extension. And he's just so smart when it comes to golf fitness and how the body works and rotation and your hips. So, yeah. And then, you know, with Ripstick, again, with my swing coach, they actually kind of have some fitness programs that they put together, and that's where my old college teammate comes into play. For quite some time, they've been putting together some like online fitness programs for me. So those are my coaches, I would say. I know you were talking about this. You started seeing a mental performance coach. I was kind of seeing one in November, December, and I mean, maybe I should work with him again. But I think I need to nail down like the mental performance coach side.
Yes. One thing I find difficult, or not difficult, challenging with finding coaches is you don't know until you really like try them.
Yeah.
What's kind of like your process like with trying out new coaches, finding coaches, and sticking with them?
Oh, that's such a good question because I think It's so tough to find a coach that like just fits how you work, right? Because for a while I actually went through a few coaches just on the swing side. And for me, what I like to find is if I go and see somebody, whether it's my swing or in the gym, I don't want someone to look at me and say, "Well, we need to rework you into this, you know, perfect swing." because everyone has like their own, everyone has their own swing, right? You look at Dustin Johnson, Jim Furyk, Matt Wolf, just some of these guys that have goofy swings, or they're not textbook. I'm not textbook, but it works. And if someone were to change those players' swings, it could have destroyed their careers. John Rahm's probably the best example. He talks about it like crazy. He's like, there was one point in John Rahm's career where someone was trying to change his swing, and they were like, no, like, we need to work with what you have and what your body can do, because his right hip is lower than his left hip. And that's why John Rahm's got just such a different golf swing. But what you do is you take what you have and you make it work. And so finding a coach that understands that, and they're not trying to shove you into what they think is a one size fits all, because that's just not how it is. So that was the biggest thing for me. Yeah. Well, what do you think?
Oh, I want to give a shout to the GOAT, Annika. Annika, if you're watching this, I would love to have you on.
Let's get her on. Jason, you have a good lineup too. You got some like real big names coming on BirdieCast.
Yeah, we'll see. Trying to make it grow. BirdieCast everywhere. But yeah, we're just trying to share the love for the game and share the whole process of getting better at it, introducing new resources to people, and just getting to know about different people in the golfing industry, whether you are playing or coaching, but you are in the business of golf performance, right? That's what we're all about, trying to get better at golf and see how good we can get. So as you started, you know, playing professionally, what's one thing that you wish you had learned faster, or, you know, that you did not expect?
You're gonna like relate to this so much. I had no idea like the finances that were involved and how all that worked. I feel stupid that I never even thought about it, but picture this, you know, you grow up and junior golf, if you're so fortunate, your parents are just providing for you to get to your tournaments, and they're paying for everything and they buy your clubs. And then you get to college golf and everything is handed to you. You have a trainer, you have your coaches, you get your food paid for, like you're traveling for free, you're getting a college education, like everything is teed up for you for success, and you're not paying anything. I mean, I actually walked away from some tournaments. I don't know if I should say this, but I walked away from some tournaments with money in my pocket because coach would be like, hey, here's $50 to go use for dinner, and I'd go get like Chipotle. But I had no idea, you know, here I am at 4 years old and I want to be a professional golfer when I'm older, and I do everything that I possibly can to get there. And all of a sudden you graduate college and I just didn't understand, wow, I have to come up with $10,000 for Q school now. I have to come up with all of this money just to go make it work. Like, golf is the only sport where when you graduate college, no one cares about your resume. Like, you're not football where you sign a contract and you go on, or basketball, any other sport. It's like, good luck, you know? And if you don't have rich parents and if you don't have sponsors, like, what do? And you're 21 years old. I'm dumb. I'm like, well, okay, I got to get a job. Because I have to, like, where do I live? Like, I need to afford rent. I need to afford food, a car. So I just didn't fully understand that. And I wish I understood that process when I was younger. And here's why. Because in college, again, everything's teed up for you. And I was always, like, I hate to admit this, I was always nice to the boosters. And, you know, the boosters at any college are who support the golf program. And I wish I just told everyone every single year, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to go pro. I want to get on the LPGA tour. I'm going to need help. Can you help me? Like, just making those connections and staying connected to people in your circle while you're in college and tell them what you want to do, because those are the people that, I mean, they're supporting you throughout college. Like, they're going to want to support you in your professional career. And I just didn't do any of that, unfortunately. But Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing I wish I would have known is just like how this whole process works. And I know this is long-winded, but I feel terrible. Not terrible, but like I think back to my own shoes and I'm like this little tiny girl that wants to play on the LPGA tour and I'm killing, like I'm kicking ass and doing everything that I can to get there. And then the harsh reality hits with all this finances and the troubles of playing mini tour golf. And like, you know, I feel bad because like the young girls don't know that yet. And hopefully things change by the time that they're older. And I think they are because women's golf is growing like crazy. But there's, you know, there's that. And you can understand it too. So it's freaking hard.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've got a couple junior players that I coach myself as well when I'm not working on my own game. And I tell them all the time, whenever they get a chance to play in, you know, junior AMs or even just at a at some nice country club that they get invited to play, try to get their business cards. You know, you never know when you're going to be able to reach out or they reach out to you. You know, it might be in 7, 8 years when they finish college. But that's the moment that they're going to be like, hey, you know, I'm doing this thing. I want to play a full season on whatever tour and would love for you to be a part of it. So, and just having that stack of business cards, like just accruing them over years, like you don't need to use them right away, right? You might never use them. Like that would be the ideal situation, but just in case, and you never know. So that's can definitely relate to that.
That's like the best advice. And I guess to junior golfers that are listening to this, whether you want to go professional or you just want to get into the business world, like your biggest business guys are on the golf course. And so those guys, you know, when you meet those guys, yeah, ask what they do and ask if you can have a business card, because whether it's, you know, maybe you graduate from college, you can reach out to them and say, hey, do you have a job opportunity? Or maybe it's, hey, I need sponsors, whatever it is. But like building that network is just networking like crazy will help you succeed more in whatever you do.
Absolutely. And golf is such a interesting culture on its own, I feel like. So if you have played golf together, you've already spent 5 hours together. That's a lot more time than if you like even meet someone one or two times for a coffee. So that's just a lot different. And also just the process of playing golf together, you're kind of, you know, struggling together or doing really well together. So you already have that experience in the bag. Do you remember your first paycheck?
Yeah. So it was the Colorado Women's Open. I think it was like $800, but I didn't even care. I was so pumped. I'm like, it was my first professional tournament. And I was like, hell yeah. Like I made a cut. I made some money. I'm like, this is great. So that was my first. And then since then, I mean, just very small, you know, mini tour golf, you get a lot of small paychecks if you make cuts. And a lot of times they don't even cover entry fees. But my biggest one was recent, which is funny. I won the Minnesota State Open a couple years in a row. And I think I got $800 the first year and like $1,200 last year.
What, for winning?
For winning. And the guys get 10 grand.
Wow.
The guys get 10 grand and everyone was like, oh, dang, you probably got a good paycheck, right? And I'm like, I literally got $1,200.
Wow.
But yeah, my biggest one was this last December. I was playing in the Arizona Women's Open. It was mine to win on the 18th tee. Like I replayed it in my head a million times. I had a 2-stroke lead and I totally bombed the hole. I make bogey. She makes birdie. And we go into a sudden death playoff. It went to like 5 holes and I lost. So I ended up taking second, which was 5 grand. 10 grand would have been a lot nicer. 5 grand is not bad, yeah.
Get you covered for a couple weeks at least.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
We talked a little bit about, you know, the money aspect and even considering finding a job. Did you end up doing that?
Yeah, so like right out of college, I actually got into the finance world and I've been in the finance world ever since, literally funding my golf career. And it's been rough. Like I quit once because I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to play professionally, I need to go all in. So I quit my job and all I did was try and compete, and I made it 6 months. And I was like, I can't do this. Like, I don't have any money. So then I got back into the working world and I've been in it ever since. And even now, like, I'm still in the finance industry and I don't work a ton, but I'm just doing what I can to like make enough money. So it's expensive. And even right now, it's like, everyone's like, what's your summer schedule look like? And, you know, what tournaments are you playing in? And I'm like, I don't know, because it's expensive. So I wish I could say I'm going to play a full season, but I don't know if I can afford a full season without any help. Like, so I got to work. I got to like make some money. I'm also doing lessons. Like, I really like the coaching side. And I know you're tapping into that too, but I'm doing like online lessons now, which is awesome. So I, you know, trying to make money. And then the Instagram thing.
Yes.
Like Instagram, I'm trying to partner with more companies kind of on a more continuous basis, because at the end of the day, these companies want content and promotion, and it's stuff that I already use every single day. So kind of those are the three avenues of revenue.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit how you got into the, you know, social media game, how you kind of grew it, and where you're at now, what you're trying to do with it now.
Yeah. So in all honesty, I was actually pissed because there was all these girls on Instagram that were not actually playing professional golf that were getting all of the free stuff. And it bothered me. I was like, how are these girls that aren't playing getting the free stuff? But I understood it. I'm like, okay, well, they have followers on Instagram, and that's what companies want because it's marketing.
And I bet that some of them make more money than even full-time players do.
They make way more. I mean, like, some people are making, it's insane. I mean, they're making like 70 grand a year. And then you get tons of free stuff on top of it. And now, yeah, it is a full-time job for content creation because it's a lot of work to like create the content, but they're killing it. And that's why some of these girls, I mean, there's tons of them, right? And I shouldn't throw out names, but that's why they're not playing, because they're like, wow, I can make a career out of this and still stay in golf, where professional golf route is kind of miserable because you don't have money. So I'm trying to pair them together. I really wanted to grow my Instagram because I'm like, I want to play professional golf. I need help. So in order to get help, I need to grow my Instagram. And honestly, I just studied the algorithm, and at the end of the day, people want value. So if you post a lot of valuable stuff that will help people, like, people like that. They want to follow you. And so I posted lots of tips and valuable things, the gym. I post a lot of my stories, motivational stuff. Like, that kind of helped take my Instagram off, I think. And it's just grown ever since. So yeah, I'm kind of just trying to keep building off that. Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're basically trying to have your following and your reach support your playing career.
Yeah, totally. Plus, people want to see, like, it's a story, it's a journey. People want to follow that. And so being able to be open and share that journey, which I'm actually not, I'm trying to get better at it, but it's one of my biggest things I'm working on right now. Let's say I have a bad tournament. You know, I just played bad in my last tournament. I have a tough time sharing that on social media because I'm kind of embarrassed.
Yeah, that's what I find too, is like if you look on my social media, I rarely post about tournaments anymore. I don't really want to talk about it. I just want to like focus on my game and actually do the thing. And I don't want to deal with anybody. Like, if they want to follow me, they will follow me. They'll watch the leaderboard if they actually care. But I'm not going to yeah, I'm just not like, I think I don't think I'll ever get back to doing that unless someone else takes it over and will post it for me, basically. But I don't want to get into the mindset of, it just puts too much focus on me. The more time I spend talking about it online or just sharing stuff about tournaments, the more my mindset goes towards results and results leaderboards. And that's not really going to get you any better, really. Like, you just got to focus on what you're doing right now, your practice, your shot at hand, and really more process oriented rather than results oriented. And I have a really hard time with that in general. And I felt like even just posting about it, and I didn't do a lot of it, like at all. But even just a little bit, it just kind of emphasizes that mindset on results versus the process. And that's why, yeah, so I can relate with that in terms of posting about tournaments, and especially like when you're not playing well. Yeah.
That's like the best advice that I'll even take that in, you know, because yeah, you can't focus on results. Like, if you're the best player in the world, you're missing cuts still, and you need to understand that. And so, yeah, at first I was thinking that I wanted to share more on social media about my tournament play, but I just want to do what you're doing. Like, I just want to do it.
But at the same time, like, I do see some people posting about it constantly, some guys, and they'll like legit share like, oh man, I suck today. You know, I shot 79 or whatever it was, and they'll talk about it. And honestly, kudos to them to then still be able to, you know, continue with their practice and feel like they're still getting the most out of it and are staying focused and not dealing with, you know, any comments or worry about what other people think necessarily, or dealing with people like, oh, you know, asking about your tournaments constantly and yeah, just asking about results. I don't know. I'm like so sensitive to it that like I just can't deal with it all. So like when I see someone else that does do it, like I have a lot of respect for that for sure if it doesn't affect them. Like I don't know how to do that. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm on your same page. Like kudos to them to be able to do that, because honestly, I sometimes can't deal with the comments, and I try very hard to not care about what some people say and what people think. I've gotten really good at it, but if I just want to not even cross that path, it's just like, I don't even want to waste the energy in reading some of that stuff. And so I don't know, that's like one thing that I think is really tough about being a player, but also doing the social media thing. And then when you win, it's like, hell yeah, like, let's go. You know, and then that's exciting.
Yeah, sure. You want to share the good news, but yeah.
Like, I just qualified for the US Open.
Yeah, I mean, even the great players, you know, like Annika, she had a hard time even just dealing with the media with interviews after rounds, right? It's very similar, but social media is more self-provoked rather than like, oh, you get asked for an interview, right? So that's a little bit different. But let's talk a little bit about a little bit more about your backstory, okay? I know you've been on this like fitness journey. How did you come about that?
Oh man, this one's deep. So I, yeah, I got like really involved with health and fitness. I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but I, when I had to quit playing because I realized that financially I couldn't do it, and I got back into the working world, I kind of just fell into this whole spiral downhill and being forced into a box and a life that just wasn't for me. And, you know, essentially I'm not chasing my dreams anymore. And I just got almost depressed, and I took it out on my own body. I just fell into a path where I straight up had an eating disorder, and I got really skinny. And it's hard to admit. I can admit it now, but then I couldn't admit it. And I was super stubborn, and I didn't want to talk about it. And I told everyone I was fine. But long story short, I lost a ton of weight. Like, I probably was under 100 pounds, but I was so MIA and didn't care about life that I just don't even know. I was so out of it. But yeah, I'm 5'5". I got 100 pounds or less. I was bone thin. I was forced to see doctors and physical therapists and nutritionists and all these people. And I'm like, you guys suck. I don't care what you say. And yeah, it's just like, I don't know, one day it finally hit me, and I prayed about it, and it just changed my whole life around really in like a week. And I'm like, I gotta play again, and I'm not in a player's body right now. Like, I'm so weak, I'm so, you know, I'm not LPGA material right now. So I just was like, put my mind to it that I'm gonna become like this badass in the gym and get back on tour and share my story. So I, over the last couple of years now, you know, with discipline, going to the gym every day and nutrition, I just learned a lot through this process on nutrition as well. I'm up like 25 pounds of muscle, 10 miles an hour swing speed. Yeah. And through this process, yeah, I'm in the gym like every day. I'm just like a gym nut. And it's been fun because I've just learned so much. But then also the nutrition side, like when I did hit this low, I didn't eat. I was scared to eat carbs. Like I wouldn't even eat a banana because I was brainwashed to think that it had too much sugar in it, and sugar made you fat. No, that's like not even kidding you. I was scared to eat a banana, and I'm like, what kind of society tells us that bananas are bad because there's sugar in them, and like we're brainwashing all these girls? And you know, I was bone thin, and I was scared to get fat, so it was bad. But I've had to like retrain my mind, and it's terrifying to like gain weight when you're scared of gaining weight. And a lot of people, which is interesting, a lot of people, their fitness journeys are trying to lose weight, and it's cool to see. And, you know, always kudos to those guys who have these crazy weight loss journeys, but like gaining weight is very, very hard. So just mentally, it's been like a crazy tough process, and forcing myself to eat carbs and learning more about nutrition. A lot of people don't know, well, a lot of people do know, but I eat plant-based, which people are like, what, where do you get your protein from? And like, I gained this muscle by eating a plant-based diet, which is shocking as well. And you know, more to that another day, but I swear on it. And yeah, now I'm just like, I'm using everything I can from my fitness, my nutrition to reach my goals. And I think the fitness and nutrition side is actually a big component to it.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for sharing that. I know that's a, you know, personal story of yours, and yeah, just appreciate you sharing that here for the BirdieCast listeners. Who knows, maybe it can help one or more of them. To finish off this episode, we are having our practice challenge of the week. Do you have one for us?
I do. I had to think of it last minute. My putting has actually been terrible lately, and so I was thinking about a putting challenge. Very simple, but just 10 balls around one hole, 5 footers. So just kind of go around a hole with a 5 foot putt, 10 balls, and see how many you can make. So the goal is to get 10 for 10. And if you can do that, great. But I'll be curious to see what our listeners can do, because 5 footers are tough. The make percentage is actually not as high as you think it is on a 5 footer. But yeah, so just kind of go around the hole, and because that helps change up the putt every time too, which is the challenge. I'll do this one too. I mean, the goal is 10 for 10, but we'll see. I don't know.
Perfect. Perfect. Do you want it to be flat or on a little bit of a slope?
Oh, a little slope, but nothing too crazy.
Like maybe like a 1 or 2% slope. All right. Great. Thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. I think this episode has been really good, and I appreciate you coming on.
Hey, I appreciate you having me, and BirdieCast, I'm excited about this because yeah, like you said, I mean, the goal is just like overall game improvement and tapping into some of the top players and coaches. So thanks so much. Looking forward to more of these.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. Thanks, Betsy. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks. You too. We'll see you.